coming to you from sunny Orlando, Florida. Welcome to the Paper Stack Podcast, where we cover current topics in the note industry, give you tactics for your note business, and talk with industry leaders to make you a better note investor. And now, your hosts, Brett Berkey and Rick Allen.
Welcome back to the Paper Stack Podcast. I'm Rick Allen. This is Brett Berkey. We're back for another edition. And is this the first one in the brand new studio?
No, you did one with Kevin Shortell.
Oh, Kevin Shortell. We did do one with Kevin, which is dropped already.
Yeah, that was 2 weeks ago.
Yes, that's good.
That, so that was good. And this is the first one both of us have done it.
He raised the bar, so you really have to...
I don't think I could follow Kevin Shortell.
You have to step it up. Which was fantastic. What do we have? What's going on? Anything new?
We have some new products.
Oh, we have some new events.
New events?
How many days?
15.
15 days until Note Expo in Dallas, Texas. Mm-hmm. I'm giving a TED Talk, and we are releasing some new stuff out on the stage.
That's going to be really cool. And also, too, if you're on the site and you're in a transaction, you might have seen some of the new stuff already. So. It's live. It's a little thing called AI.
Dark AI. Mm-hmm. PaperStack's very own AI component. Super cool stuff.
Yeah.
The stuff that's out there right now, we can talk about, right?
Yeah, we can talk about
that. Yeah, the stuff that we have out there right now is fantastic. One of them is just something, it's called CoWriter. It basically helps improve your writing. So anytime you're leaving a comment, you can click check for grammar, spelling, improve writing, make it longer, make it shorter, change the tone, happier, luckier, more professional.
We're going to give it the Chris 70 spin at one point, but...
More aggressive, more direct, I would say.
More direct.
Yes.
You didn't know.
Which is good. And then we have something where if you're a seller, and I guess a buyer on the platform, you're going to absolutely love the one we just released, and that is the document reviewer.
Yeah.
And basically, when it's time to start drafting assignments, allonges, all you do, and when you're filling in the closing data, which is all the recording data, the original lender, the borrower name, all that stuff.
The legal description,
the book, the page. All you have to do is drag and drop one of the old recorded assignments, and it extracts all the data. And then when it's time for you to fill it in, it makes suggestions on what it extracted from the assignments. So
pretty cool.
It is fantastic.
I thought that was going to take a lot longer than it did. I thought it was going to be like years, but I was like...
It takes something that takes sometimes 15, 20 minutes, depending on how big the legal is, and is usually riddled with human error, and it reduces it down to mere seconds. It's unbelievable.
What's really magical is that's going to be used for larger trades too, where you'll be able to upload 50 collateral files with 50 assignments and stuff, and it'll map all of it instantly. So what used to take 6 weeks for some of these giant 100, 200 transfers is going to go all the way down
quickly. It'll just happen. Yes.
It's magical.
In near real time. So super excited about that. And then we have a couple other ones that I will not be telling you about now. You have to either find out about it at Note Expo or catch some of our emails post Note Expo where we go over the brand new stuff that we've released. Both of them are great. Both of them are fantastic.
Okay, magical stuff.
Yeah.
It's a whole new world for it. So, that's the Note Expo. The 15 days. And besides that, this new studio, new place, new digs. It's going to kind of moving into it, a little bit of a change, but.
Yeah.
So.
What do you have today?
Long-time caller, first-time listener, I think they called in, and it's from somebody that we know very well. They asked a question of...
You know what you just said, right?
Yeah.
You know what you just said.
Long-time caller, first-time listener.
He's back.
What are some of the common ways that investors use a screening criteria for notes? If I want a low-risk note to get started with how much debt that needs to be paid down to consider it low-risk, what kind of parameters should I be looking at for like LTV, ITV, ITB? Basically, how do you do your due diligence on a note that's low risk compared to something that's high risk? What are the parameters you're looking at? So we'll start with this one with, if we're doing a low risk one, what are the parameters? And we'll save, because this could go long if we did both. So we're just going to do low risk, and then on the new podcast, we'll do what is high risk. And so let's start with low risk.
Low risk is going to be... Let's define what's low risk. I mean,
that's a good question too. Yeah.
I would consider something low risk something that's been performing. It's got a long pay history. They're on time with their payments. That to me is something that's lower risk. You just got to kind of look at it and say, something that's been brand new with no payments versus something that if they've got 6 years of payments they've never missed, that's fairly low risk.
credit score.
If they've got a high credit score, you know, a 750 and up. I'm going to say that's, you know, 700s really and up is probably fairly low risk. I mean, if you get low 700s is questionable, but something in the mid sevens and up, you're like, this is just, it's low risk. It's cookie cutter. Like, what I don't really need to worry about, set it and forget it, call it what you want. Where you start running into the higher risk stuff is when you've got lower credit scores, you've got smaller payment history, or you have really tight loan to values. Right?
Yeah.
Lower risk is going to be a bigger, or is going to be a smaller loan to value. So maybe the value is 200 and they owe 100 grand on it. 50% loan to value.
That's really good.
That's
190.
Yeah. If you have, you know, $100,000 value and they have $90,000 on it, well, you got, you know, there's still equity there. There's still 10%, but it doesn't leave you much room to wiggle. Right. If they stop making payments and you got to get the house back, you really are going to look at how much money do I have to spend to get this project back, or how much money am I going to have to spend to get it back performing again?
Right.
And then obviously with that is what sort of price band asset is it? Mm. Are we talking 100,000 and under? Mm. Are we talking 300,000? Right. Because something in, you know, that's 90% at $500,000 asset, well, there's $50,000 off. Arguably the price, right? So you're at, it's worth, yeah, it's worth 500. You're at 450. You're like, well, 15,000, 20,000 in foreclosure costs, and then another 25 grand in closing fees. I'm at least going to break even. You're looking at $100,000 asset that's at 90%. But I got 15 grand in closing costs. So I'm already at 105%. Right?
Yeah.
And then I got to figure in, well, how am I going to get out of this? You know, surely I'm not selling this with no holding costs or no fees. So lower the price band of the assets, sort of the higher the risk.
Interesting. So let's say that I'm just getting started and I wanted to buy something that's maybe in the 20,000s. What would
20,000s meaning what?
Like the it's like a $20,000 to $30,000 note. How's the risk if I'm, because a lot of our buyers are people that are buying, you know, maybe their first note, they want something less risky that's, maybe they're not, they don't want to, what's risky to them is putting out 100,000. You know, like, they're not a pro like you. Like, so they're like,
so they're associating risk with, hey, this is the amount of capital I'm putting out.
Right. I mean, well, there's two ways of looking at
I'm
it.
I'm risking
they're
this
looking
much.
At it, like how you're looking at it is the right way. And then also the way they're looking at it could be, hey, I only got $30,000 to play with.
Well, if you only have $30,000 to play with, you know, and you're not buying a $50,000 or you know, a $100,000 asset or $200,000 asset. So I'm looking at, if I'm mitigating risk, I'm probably buying something like a partial.
A partial?
That's a good way to mitigate your risk. If I want to participate in a larger asset, if I really want to mitigate my risk and I'm okay with the returns, I'm going to take my money and I'm going to give it to a fund.
Mm-hmm.
Who's doing this? I can spread my risk out of over a bunch of assets. You know, funds who historically have returned well, which is all public knowledge. You can go find that out, right?
That's true.
That's what I'm doing. I'm looking for, that's the route in which I'm going to do this. So usually the way risk is it's tied directly to return.
Mm-hmm.
The higher the risk, the higher the return, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that's why you see a lot of land notes that are at 12.99%
yeah.
or higher. It's because they're riskier loans because there's no really, like, there's not a lot of underlying collateral. If you're paying par for it and you have to go take it back, well, your only option is really to sell it for a higher amount.
Right?
Sell for a larger amount and do it with a discount or do it with some other financing or something along those lines.
Yeah.
Versus if you're like, hey, I'm going to take my money, my $30,000, and I'm going to give it to, you know, somebody who's got a Reg A or a Reg D fund, they've registered with the SEC, mm-hmm. and they've got this fund out there that's buying and selling hundreds of loans.
Mm-hmm.
I'm probably not going to be, I'm not going to get, you know, the 13, 14, 15% returns.
Mm.
Right? Why?
Because
it's less risky, right? So the smaller the risk, usually it's just the lower the return, which is fine. Some people are completely content with, like, look, give me 8, 9%. Right.
Yeah, a lot of those funds do operate on like a scale. Right. The more you invest, the higher return you get. I've seen that with some of them. That you know, up to there's one out there that at 50,000, I think it turns into 12, something like that. So, which is interesting because you know a lot of those people are either on the site or selling on the site, and they're you know, you ask them what they want to get as their return, and they're asking for, you know, 14 to 15 because they have to cover their costs.
That's it. And what you kind of see right now is as the interest rates float,
yeah,
and go up, people are wanting higher returns, right? You know, geez, I mean, we were getting 0.25% on money sitting in a money market account 12 months ago.
Mm-hmm.
And then our banks are like, hey, we can get you a higher rate if we put this into this account over here, and you're getting 4.5-5% in a money market account, right?
Mm-hmm.
So if somebody's getting money lent to them, or they're borrowing money, or they've got a structured fund, they've got to be competitive,
mm-hmm,
right? So if people are giving you money, you're like, well, I got to give them 10% or 12% returns.
Mm-hmm.
Versus 18, 24 months ago, you're like, people are happy getting 6% or 8%. Mm-hmm. But now that's not the case. Because you're like, well, I can go get, I don't know what the 10 years at right now, but I can go pile it in there or in the 2 year. Mm-hmm. And I can just get that and get my returns. I can go to a money market account and get 4.5-5%.
Yeah.
So as the rates ratchet up, people are starting to look for higher returns. And so usually the higher the returns, that means it's the lower, you got to offer a bit more of a discount, or you have to have a higher rate that you've lent out at and you're selling on the platform.
That is scary though, because you're going to hit a threshold at one point where you can't, as interest rates rise, I think it's just going to kind of curve it, right? Kind of where it's,
yeah,
like, that would kind of stop almost. I think their goal with, you know, all that's just to stop inflation. Because eventually it's going to happen.
Oh yeah, yeah. The only way to get, you know, what they said is you got to raise the rates above the inflation rate. So,
which is going to be pretty damn high. Jeez. All right. Well, I guess that answers the question. So you
look at different things though, like right for risk, and you look at, you know, I think something in there that this person asked was, you know, when am I looking at loan to balance versus loan to value, right? And so, you know, sort of the UPB is always important. What's the unpaid principal balance? But also, what's the underlying value of the asset?
Right.
Those two things you always are having to look at, because you need to know, like, look, always you're planning for the worst and you know, preparing for the best, or preparing for the worst, hoping for the best type of thing.
When you're doing that, you're looking at the ITV.
Right. And what's my investment to balance? What's my investment to value?
Yeah.
Also, because if the underlying collateral, if the house is only worth 100 and the debt owed is 105, you're like, well, I can't go based off of the balance. I got to go off the value of the house.
Right.
Because the house is worth less.
Mm-hmm.
Versus if the house is worth 200 and they owe 150, well, you know, I can look at it and say, okay, the house, the collateral is there to cover the cost of the balance of the loan.
Mm-hmm.
Now I'm bidding off that balance, right? You wouldn't pay over the balance, even though the value of the underlying collateral is worth more.
Yeah, so that's something that you see those on the site. Those are two negotiating criteria that you should be looking at.
You should always look at that. And those two, it's going to, you know, performing versus non-performing, you have to look at it and understand both sides. What's the underlying real estate worth?
Which do you look at first? Or is there not a reason why? Or would you look at the value? I would imagine you look at the value first, because if the house is worth, you know, way more, that really determines a lot. And if it's worth less.
You look at the value of the house, but I look at the value of the real estate. But it's at the same time that I'm looking, like, I'm trying to put the whole piece of the story together. So, you know, the value of the real estate is one piece of the puzzle. It's a big piece of the puzzle. What's going on with the loan is the other big piece of the puzzle. There's some of the other stuff that's filtering in. But those are the two big things that you're looking at, because you're like, okay, performing loan, real estate's worth more than the debt. Okay, I got a good idea now of where we're going to fall. Non-performing loan, real estate's worth more than debt. Okay, I got an idea.
Mm-hmm.
Non-performing loan, real estate's worth less than the debt.
Not touching it.
Well, yeah, you can still touch it,
mm-hmm,
but it's just like, hey, you know, I might bid on that one. I maybe bid 30 cents on the dollar of the balance of the real, or what the real estate's worth,
mm-hmm,
you know, or what the loan is, and it turns out to be 50 cents of what the actual collateral's worth. So it really varies. You just have to have a pretty solid understanding of when you're going in and bidding stuff, and the only way to really get it is to A, learn, have somebody teach you, go through the steps, but really to understand it, you have to just start analyzing deals. The more deals you look at, the easier it gets.
Yeah.
And you just start real slow, and you look at one, and you say, okay, let's run through this deal. And then you try to find one that's different. You say, okay, how would I bid this different?
That's actually really good. I mean, so it's kind of like if you're on the site and you're looking at a listing itself, you're going to put on the two different hats. First, you maybe start with the real estate hat, which is the value.
Mm-hmm.
You're understanding, well, I'm going to go run comps. I see the Zillow, what's sold in the last 6 months, whatever, all that stuff, right? And you kind of get that value, not an official BPO, but you at least got an earned share value. And then, okay, I've done the real estate side. Now you jump over to the notes or the banker side and run what's based off the balance. And so it's kind of an interesting way to look at it, that you're wearing basically two different hats.
And this is on the one-off thing, right? This is buying, you're buying 1, 2, 5, 10 at a time.
Mm-hmm.
It can be a little different if you're buying 100 at a time. You know, you're looking the overall value of the pool that you're buying.
That's interesting. We've never done a podcast on bidding on large pools of assets. Maybe we'll have to do that one.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, that was good. So I think we learned a lot. You know, there's a lot of things to look at. Definitely.
Or we muddied the waters. I have more questions than answers.
Well, then leave them in the comments. Because, you know, I think it boils down to understanding the loan to value is what's an important thing with that. Also, to understanding the ITV and how to value it and how to value it on the site and look at it that way. And then understanding the ITB, understanding what the balance is, UPB that's owed and what versus the other one. So those things all look good.
Well, then you're underwriting, it's a full credit. You underwrite the borrower. You do a credit underwrite on them.
You know what we could do? I don't know if this is possible. Maybe we could come up with a certain type of safe search that would match a pretty decent safe investment based off an LTV. We can't?
No. No, we can't do that.
Yeah, okay.
No. You have to run your own due diligence. You have to find out for yourself what's a good one, what's a bad one.
But you can use those filters. They're on the site. They're there. So you can set up your own safe search using those safe filters.
Right. But it comes down to like, look, if I'm casting a wide net and I'm saying, look, it's performing and there's my loan to value and my investment to value, it's both 80% or less. Okay. That's pretty basic, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like, hey, the house, there's 20% in equity, no matter which way I slice it, and it's performing loan. From there, that'll kind of like, it'll weed out the stuff that you don't want to. And then you take that collection and you look at it and you say, okay, let me pull, you know, how much money do I have? You might want to put, you know, list price in there as one. But once you have all that stuff, you can kind of start going through it and then weed out the stuff.
And then go one step further and you can even weed out judicial versus not.
If you want to. Yeah, yeah. Sure. Judicial.
That would be a pretty safe, I mean, they're not saying that's a safe bet, but that is pretty narrowed in on what might work for somebody. We can't say that works for everybody.
No, it's just it's your personal preference, you know. Do you want stuff in judicial states or non-judicial states?
Mm.
You know, you look at the statistics on the platform, and Texas was number one, which is traditionally non-judicial sheriff's sale, and you look at Florida was number two.
But Florida's both.
But Florida is judicial.
Isn't it non-judicial too, though?
Mm-mm. It's judicial.
So it's judicial. And then Ohio is what?
Judicial.
So, wow. So, yeah, it was Texas. Ohio was the second one. And then it was Florida.
Right.
And then it was, I don't even know what else after that. But.
So, there's
that's that. Yeah.
That's that.
So, we'll get to next time how to identify the risk and maybe some other ones with pools. But we're always looking for awesome topics to cover. Of course, this one came from somebody that was a on the platform looking at stuff, really trying to find their first note and get in there and buy something. So if you have your own questions for us, for Rick, you know, I will ask the questions and he will knock down the answers. If you haven't yet, check out the Academy. We're doing a lot of cool stuff. There's something cool coming to the Academy.
Are you going to talk about it, or are you going to wait, or are you waiting to see if it works?
Oh, what the hell? I'm going to put my money where my mouth is, because now it's going to have to work. The simulator's coming. We're going to be having stuff inside the platform, inside of the Academy, where you actually be able to do mock transactions and due diligence things. We're going to put in interactive gotchas, where it's interactive videos. Where
choose your own adventure for mortgage investing.
Yep.
As holding hands with a stock simulator. So all those, you know, sort of things wrapped up into a ball of goodness that Brett's been working on.
I'm excited. It finally found the software that we can do this with, and I finally figured out how to. It took a lot of writing, a lot of sitting and hemming and hawing and shower thoughts, as I call them. But now it's here. It's not here. It's coming. It'll be here soon. So maybe by the time we talk to the next episode or the next episode after that, we'll have some examples of simulations.
Yep. So Node Expo, Dallas, November 3rd through the 5th, 3rd through the 4th, 3rd through the 4th.
It's definitely the 3rd through the 5th because my wife's birthday is the day before. And oh, no, it's Thursday. It's that Thursday.
So
because I always leave my wife's birthday.
We'll be there. We'll fly in Thursday and flying out Saturday. So if you're there, let us know. talk to us in the comments. We can set up. We'll be hanging out Thursday. We fly in early Thursday, so we'll be there all day Thursday at the hotel, staying on site. So maybe we'll bump into you, say hello, grab a cup of coffee, have an adult beverage. Who knows?
Sounds good. I like it. I'm ready to go. So see you on the next one.
Bye.
See ya.
Are you new to the mortgage note industry? Have you been wanting to learn the step-by-step process to purchase your first mortgage note? Well, you're in luck. We've convinced our CEO, Rick Allen, to break down everything he knows about mortgage note investing. Through a series of 50 videos, you'll get everything from start to finish of where to purchase notes, how to purchase notes, and all of Rick's investing techniques he has developed over the many years. From performing note tactics to non-performing notes, Rick gives you everything he knows about investing. Bonuses include our glossary of industry terms, Rick's own proprietary calculators he created to evaluate notes, discounts from our partners, our Rolodex of vendors, a private Facebook group, along with a lot more. We've packed so much content into the Academy to take you from beginner to expert in no time. To learn more about the Academy, go to academy.paperstack.com/welcome. Again, that is academy.paperstack.com/welcome.